Bloomberg Surveillance with Michael McKee and Tom Keane. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Bitcoin, a first assessment. We're honored to bring you David Wu. David, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
What was the response to your report? Give us an anecdote about what the Bitcoin world said about David Wu's report.
Tom, I have to say, I've been in this business for many years, and I was totally overwhelmed by the reaction yesterday to the report when it came out. And then, it just went viral, just hundreds of emails from clients, from salespeople, from the press. It also sort of allowed me to gain a glimpse into the public fascination with Bitcoin as a phenomenon. And it tells me that this is not just a fad. I mean, I think there's probably something culturally preconditioned, the world to the arrival of this new currency. And I think it's fascinating itself.
Your wonderful report, and folks, we protect the copyright of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. I'm not going to mail it out to you. Makes a distinction between an underworld analysis and a more visible transaction world analysis. Is Bitcoin a product of the underworld right now?
I think to some extent, but I think it's probably a bit exaggerated. Tom, as you probably know, I think a lot of people have been saying, wow, this is going to be a great investment because every criminal, every drug dealer in the world is going to be basically using Bitcoin as a store of value, a store of wealth. I think a lot of people really misunderstand this, because if you think about this, there are two features of Bitcoin that actually makes it relatively unattractive if you are a drug dealer. For example, every Bitcoin, for example, has a public, available history of every transaction, which allows basically regulators to, agencies, police to basically track you down very easily. The second thing is that history that's unique to every single Bitcoin cannot be altered. So you won't be able to cover your track.
Except you saw the New York Times story this morning, front page of the New York Times, about how much fraud is underway in Bitcoins, including stealing Bitcoins.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's a different issue. Bank robberies on Bitcoin exchanges.
But there's no deposit insurance. There's no nothing at this point.
That's absolutely all true. I'm just saying specifically for the underworld, I don't think Bitcoin is going to become a major phenomenon in the underworld. That said, I think there is something to be said about Bitcoin, as having a role to play in countries where citizens face high taxes, high capital controls, or confiscation.
Right. And the word there is efficiency. Let me read my key sentence for David Wu's landmark report. Bitcoin's role as a store of value can compromise its viability as a medium of exchange. Dr. Wu, what's a medium of exchange?
A medium of exchange is as a means of payment, a means of transfer, and so on and so forth, right? Because we typically think of money serving three purposes: as medium exchange, as a store of value, as a unit of account. I think, what we're trying to say is, right now, Bitcoin has become so volatile, it's actually compromising its role as a medium of exchange. I mean, think about it. Why wouldn't Amazon decide to start accepting Bitcoin as a means of payment for online shopping? That's because it's so volatile. Let's say they get paid in Bitcoin. 5 minutes later, this thing could have basically collapsed or rise 50%. That's not the business that Amazon's in. So I think from the point of view that because there's so much speculation, which is creating a lot of volatility, that's actually compromising the ability of Bitcoin to become generally accepted a means of payment.
And I will go with that volatility not helping Bitcoin become dominant, but it does move towards the one currency of Robert Mundell, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, to the extent that ultimately volatility is a function of liquidity. And, as Bitcoin grows, you have to believe that liquidity is going to improve, which is going to basically bring down volatility and become self-fulfilling. So from that point of view, this is one of these things that I think there is something to be said about Bitcoin as a winner-take-all type of outcome, potentially, in the world of digital currencies.
But at this point, It's merely speculation. I mean, nobody knows what this is worth or how long it's going to be until you get to a world where there's enough of them to make a difference, except at enough places to make a difference. So you're really following it as a speculative vehicle, not a currency, right?
Yeah, I think right now, yeah. That's it. I mean, I think that's where it sort of comes into the fair value question. I was much more interested in the sort of the whole fair value question about Bitcoin, because clearly there are a lot of people out there saying that, well, Bitcoin should be worth either zero or $10,000 or $100,000. Where is the limit? So I think from that point of view, the key focus in this report is to sort of trying to assign some value that actually can be a little bit more rigorously defended and debated.
How does hoarding come into this? If you look at, say, Angus Madison and his the late Angus Madison and his wonderful work back to the medieval times, is Bitcoin just a victim of hoarding in a distorted scarcity economics?
I think it's an excellent point. I think, you know, hoarding actually, you know, this is exactly where it is. What we find very clear, if you look at the Bitcoin volume data and the price data, it's very clear over the last couple of years. Whenever we've seen, you know, Bitcoin prices surging, that's when the actual transactions using Bitcoin falls. Meaning that when it's going up, nobody wants to basically use Bitcoin as a means of payment because they want to hoard it. So I think so this again comes back to the point that, you know, actually Bitcoin as object speculation is actually undermining its general acceptance as a means of payment. But I think ultimately comes down to, I mean, I think, you know, Tom, I think you would probably also agree, Bitcoin's success so far is also product of the circumstances. If the Fed weren't printing money, if the Chinese not worried about inflation, if, you know, if there isn't this unease that central banks on a slippery slope worldwide, right, I don't think Bitcoin would have been as successful as it is right now.
One of the issues that Bloomberg writing about today is that not only is Bitcoin got all the problems with fraud and et cetera that people have been writing about, but they have trouble finding banks to handle it as a currency. Does Bank of America handle Bitcoins? How do people get into this, get out of it in a way that you can track?
I don't believe the bank, well, like any other bank, is currently dealing with in Bitcoins. And I think, you know, most financial institutions are looking at Bitcoin as an experiment right now. And yeah. I think, let's put it this way, the fact that I even wrote a piece, I think it shows that there is interest, that the banks wants to know eventually where this thing can go so that it can be prepared if should it basically take it to the next level.
You have a chart that's a bent curve which shows the popularity of Bitcoin linked to Cyprus and the ECB crisis there. That again goes to the idea of Bitcoin not as underworld or black market, but at least of political unrest.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, I think again, you know, it's interesting because Cyprus, if you remember, you know, that was at a time that there was a real risk about deposit confiscation. And I think from that point of view, I think countries, you know, that have high, you know, capital controls, high taxes, you know, and confiscation risk. I think that's where Bitcoin becomes a very interesting play.
David Woot, who takes leadership here? Which global institution is going to make Bitcoin an adult currency?
I'm not sure. I think that's an excellent question. I don't have the answer to that question. I think, you know, ultimately, again, you know, what really makes Bitcoin unique is that it's a totally decentralized phenomenon, right? Its most unique aspect is that it does away with banks, with a central clearinghouse. It's really a peer-to-peer network from that point of view. So I think this is going to be sort of one of these democratic votes. You know, if there is enough interest in Bitcoin, it will grow. If it doesn't, it's not going to come down to one person, one institution. Suddenly, I think Wall Street is going to be will have the least impact on Bitcoin's future.
Very quickly, when does Bitcoin? How many years till Bitcoin becomes a mainstream medium of exchange?
I don't know. I think that's hard to say, but I think, you know, I don't think, you know, you're going to be paying your coffee at Starbucks with Bitcoin anytime soon. But is it plausible to think that maybe 10% of all, you know, e-commerce transactions could be denominated eventually in Bitcoin?
Okay.
I think that's a much more plausible outcome. And I think for that, we would basically assign about a $5 billion market cap.
David, here is a plausible outcome. Michael McKee has a Vietnamese dong in his wallet. And someday he will have a Bitcoin in his wallet.
When I can trade that in for a Bitcoin, that'll be an interesting day.
Right. David Woot, thank you so much.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 119. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.